good to be back. Okay, today we are supposed to do the final chapter of the Gita. And before we go into the last chapter, 18, we must remember the last topic, which is a very important topic that we have covered. And because we had a gap of 2 months, so let us refresh that topic of Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is the ultimate sadhana that will lead us to moksha. What is the purpose of Karma Yoga and Upasana Yoga? To purify our mind, intellect, body, and then to prepare us for Jnana Yoga. And this Jnana Yoga topic was the main topic which was covered in chapters 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. So 13 to 17 chapters were the Jnana Yoga topic. Then what is chapter 18? Chapter 18 is the summary of the entire teachings of the Gita. So before we enter into chapter 18, let us take a look at the how these chapters from 13 to 17 are linked together to present to us this whole Jnana Yoga topic. So I will go through some selected verses across these few chapters and we will see how is the link. So it all starts from chapter 13 verse 26, that is on page 251. Chapter 13, page 256. Verse 26, page 251. Now in this verse 26 of chapter 13, Krishna has said, whatever being is born, comes into existence. And he clarifies that, moving or non-moving, both. Trees, rocks, plants, animals, insects, humans, everything in this whole creation, including the devas and the asuras also, he says, know it to be born from the union of Kshetra and Kshetrajna. That means this whole creation is nothing but a mixture of these two. What is Kshetra? Field, which means it is matter, nothing but matter. And what is Kshetrajna? Kshetrajna is the consciousness. So therefore, what are we made of? Matter plus consciousness. What is the whole creation made of? Matter plus consciousness. That's very clear. Now, since the creation is made up of two components, we should know what is matter, what is consciousness, and what is the difference. So first of all, Krishna has defined what is Kshetra, what is matter, in the two verses of chapter 13, that is verse number 5 and 6. Page 242. Verses 5 and verses 6 of chapter 13. So what is matter? Matter has got many names you will find in the various scriptures. Matter is technically given many names. One name is Prakriti, that is also matter. Another name is Anatma, A-N-A-T-M-A, Anatma, not Atma, Anatma. So Prakriti, Anatma, Kshetra, whatever terms, they all refer to nothing but matter. And what is the, what we call the identification of matter? In verse number 5, he says, matter is made of the great elements, ether, air, fire, water, earth, plus ego, ahamkar, plus intellect, buddhi, plus unmanifest here means actually what we call the vasanas, that we carry forward, vasanas, unmanifest from the past births. 10 senses, mind, 5 objects of senses. And plus, very important aspect of matter is explained in verse number 6, that this matter is subject to modification and change. So, when we experience desire, hatred, pleasure, in verse number 6, pleasure, pain, all this consciousness, steadfastness, all these are nothing but modifications of matter. So now matter has been identified, various components, plus it is subject to change, subject to modification. Like our body is made of matter. So it starts with birth and ends with changes and ends with death. What about mind? Is it matter?
Yes.
Because it is also subject to change. So everything in us is matter. Then what is consciousness? Consciousness is identified in verses number 13 up to number 17. 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Starting from page 246. This is how he is identifying consciousness. So what does he say about consciousness? Again, consciousness has got many other technical names. You will find Atma is another name for consciousness. Purusha is another name for consciousness. What is it? Chetraknya also is consciousness. So all this mean nothing but consciousness. What is the identification of consciousness? Verse 13, he has hands and feet everywhere. Eyes, head and face everywhere. Ears everywhere. It stands pervading all. So what is consciousness? All the? Yeah, so how do you know where is consciousness? Wherever there are heads, there is consciousness. Wherever there is eyes, there is consciousness. Wherever there are legs, there is consciousness. Consciousness exists everywhere. And because this consciousness is unmanifest, it has no attributes. So when he says he has hands, feet, it doesn't mean consciousness or Bhagwan or Atma has got hands and legs. But he is in every hand, he is in every head, he is in every leg. He is the one that gives the consciousness to everything. So, how to identify that which has no attributes? Because Atma has got no shape, no size, no form, no color, etc., etc. So, borrowing from the language of the Upanishads, how do you describe something that has got no attributes? If I ask you to describe, how would you describe? See, if an apple you can see, you can say it is round shape, it is red color and all that, you can describe. How do you describe Atma, which is no attributes, or Brahman, which is another name for Chetraknya? How would you describe? Yes, it is invisible, we can't see it. So how would you explain it? Nityam, eternal,
pure,
what else? Sorry? Immortal, okay. I still cannot understand. What is this Nityam? You know, what is all this? I still cannot understand. So what did the Upanishads Guru do? He says, okay, I will tell you something you know. From that known, you will know the unknown. Right? So I'll tell you something that you know in creation that has the same qualities as Atman. Once you understand this, you understand Atman. And what are the two very common examples given in the Upanishads, which is also given here, is space and light. So if you understand the qualities of space, you understand what is Atman. You understand the qualities of light, you understand what is Atman. What is the quality of space? Many qualities, but some we can discuss. Number one, space is everywhere, isn't it? There is no place where space is not. So we can understand space is everywhere, Brahman is everywhere. space we cannot see, Brahman we cannot see, but we know it is everywhere. Space supports everything. Everything is supported in space. Correct? So therefore, we can also understand the whole creation is supported in Brahman, in the Supreme Consciousness. Second quality. Third quality, although space supports everything, space does not get contaminated by what it supports. Fire cannot burn space, water cannot wet space, foul smell cannot affect the space. Same way, Brahman is the very supporter, Atman, the consciousness that supports, that enlivens this body. But whatever is the condition of your body, what is the condition of your thoughts, your mind, your desires, does not affect Brahman or Atman. Okay? So like that, we can understand the nature of space, we can understand the nature of Atman. What about light? Light example is, right now, the lights are on. Underneath this light, some of you are listening to me. Some of you are deep in meditation, hopefully not in deep sleep. So under this light, we are performing various transactions, various actions. And the various actions that we perform, the light does not influence our actions, isn't it? The light is there, but it does not determine our actions. Then you may ask them, what is the purpose of the light? If you say the light is there, it does not determine what I do, whether I choose to listen or not to listen, why do I need the light? Why do I need the light? Without the light, we cannot function. If I were to switch off the lights, you can't see your books, you can't see me, you can't hear me. So, same way, Brahman provides the consciousness, it enlivens the body, but what you do with the body, what you think with your mind, is not influenced by Atman or Brahman. But yet, without the presence of God, Brahman, Atman, whatever you call it, you cannot function. Your eyes cannot see, your ears cannot hear, your hands cannot move. So then again we understand the relationship between light and human beings or whatever creation, and the relationship between Brahman and the creation. So we have understood now what is Kshetra. Kshetra is temporary, matter is temporary, matter is subject to change, and matter will eventually perish. Consciousness is eternal, consciousness is all-pervading, consciousness exists in all periods of time. Yesterday, today, tomorrow, it is the same. So all this knowledge is there. Now the question is, so what? Why should I know all this? Very big deal, this is consciousness, this is matter, so what? What does it mean to me? What does all this knowledge mean to me? Why should I study all this knowledge? So for that, we have to refer to the last verse in this chapter, 34. Chapter 13, verse 34, page 255. Why should I grasp this knowledge? Why should I know this knowledge? The difference between Kshetra and Kshetrajna. So here, Bhagavan says, they who perceive with the eye of wisdom, Jnana Chakshu. Chakshu is eye, jnana is wisdom. Where is your eye of wisdom? The third eye, or rather the thinking intellect, that is your third eye. Because you can't see Atman, it has no attributes. So you can only understand it through your intellect, through your what we call, through your understanding. By your intelligence you can understand what is Atman. Your senses cannot experience Atman. So you have to understand it with your intellect. So those who perceive the eye of wisdom, what? This distinction between Kshetra and Kshetrajna, between matter and consciousness, and the liberation, mukti from what? What are we supposed to be liberated from? Bondage of what? Are you Kshetra or Kshetrajna? Are you consciousness or matter?
Consciousness.
Consciousness. Which part of you is consciousness? How do you describe? If I say which part of you is consciousness? If you say body is matter, mind is matter, which part of you is consciousness? That which enlivens your eyes to see, your ears to hear, your hands to move, that is the consciousness. So, who are you now? Consciousness. But who do you say you are?
Body.
So, we are bound to the body, we are bound to the matter. We don't identify with consciousness, we say we are the body, we are Mr. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so, I am a teacher, I am a lawyer, I am a dentist, whatever it is, we are bound to the body. So here he says, those who understand that they are the consciousness and not the temporary body, and they are liberated from identification with the body, they go to the Supreme. So that's why this knowledge is so important for us to understand our real nature and to break away from this bondage with the body. So if you desire moksha, then this knowledge is important. If you do not desire moksha, then don't waste your time with this knowledge. So now he has talked about bondage. Now we want to understand, what is it that is causing this bondage? What is it that is tying me up to this body? So then we come to chapter 14, where he explains that there are three ropes. You have three ropes that are tying you to this, tying the jiva to this body. The ropes are called gunas. Gunas is a place called Siddhama. So, gunas, another word for gunas is ropes. And here in chapter 14, he explains that about the three ropes. Now, why knowledge of the gunas is important? If you and I, all of us, are made from the same substance, we learn that matter is the same five elements, mind, intellect, ego. So, we are all made of the same substance. Then why is it all of us behave differently? All of us look different, have different thoughts, have different desires, have different interests. That is because of the three gunas. And the three gunas, where are they? They are in matter. They are not in consciousness. So this is a very important thing to know. The three gunas are in matter because they modify matter. Consciousness is not subject to any modification. It is free of the three gunas. But yet, because of our ignorance, we claim that we are this body, because with the three gunas, we are bound to this body. So if I want to break free, what should I do? Right, I have to learn first what is the nature of the three gunas. How does sattvic guna bind me? How does rajas bind me? How does tamas bind me? Once I know what is the binding effect, then I know how to cut away the three gunas and I can free myself. So then he tells us about the three gunas, the nature of the three gunas. And he explains to us in verse 6, how does sattvic guna bind us first? Because all the three gunas cause bondage. So we have to transcend the three gunas. So how does sattvic guna binds us? When sattva, understand all the three gunas is in every creation. Nobody can escape from the three gunas. The only difference is the proportion. And one guna will always be stronger and suppress the other two gunas. So if sattvic gunas are predominant in you, you find that you are much, very much inclined towards knowledge. You are pulled towards knowledge. You are pulled towards spiritual, all kinds of spiritual activities. You are drawn towards that. But he says that also can form a cause of bondage. How does it bind you? Number one, as in the beginning stage, if you have a lot of ignorance in your mind, ignorance causes a lot of disturbance. You want to know so many things, there's so much of ignorance in your mind, so many questions you have. But as you go into the path of knowledge, as all your ignorance is cleared up, you experience some joy, some happiness. You experience, okay, at least I know this, I know that, you know. But is that happiness moksha? It's not moksha. So he says, beware. Just because you have cleared your doubts, you have cleared your ignorance, you are in a state of happiness, that is not moksha. Number two, sometimes knowledge also, attachment to happiness, we get attached to the happiness. I know this knowledge, I am very happy with this knowledge. I don't progress further, I am attached to that knowledge. So every day reading Gita book, every day reading Gita book, don't want to do anything else. You have to go beyond that also. And attachment to knowledge also is very dangerous because it can lead to arrogance. I know Gita. You don't come to Gita class, what you know. So arrogance also can arise out of that. Because we must understand, knowledge is not moksha. You have to experience, you have to put that knowledge into practice and experiences. It is just like if you see a road sign, you are driving towards Penang, and the road sign shows an arrow and says Penang is in that direction. You cannot stop at the road sign and say I have arrived in Penang, because Penang is still another 100-200 kilometers ahead. Until you arrive in Penang, then you can say I am in Penang. Similarly, scriptures are only a road sign, the gurus are only a road sign pointing you to that direction. You have to make that journey and experience that. So be very careful. Once you reach that state of contentment with knowledge, with happiness, that is not moksha. So that's how sattva binds us. Verse 7, how does rajas bind us? When rajas dominates, suppress sattva and tamas. Rajas binds us through attachment and thirst. We do, we are very active, we run about doing everything, very active. But the problem is what?
Restlessness.
Restlessness is there. But you say, what's wrong with activity? I'm a very active person, I do a lot of things. I set up businesses, I do this, I do that, I earn a lot of money and all that. All the activities you do are for who?
Selfish.
I don't care about others. I am active, but to hell with everybody. I want to know what is in it for me. If there is some gain for me, I do. Now the question is, we all need rajas. So what do I do? How do I control this rajas? So you must make sure that sattva dominates rajas. When sattva dominates rajas, sattva is pure, sattva means compassion, you have love for people, you have humility. When sattva directs rajas, your actions are directed by sattva, they go in the right direction. They are not for selfish purposes, they are done for selfless purposes. But when rajas dominate sattva, you are active but for selfish purposes. And what about tamas? How does tamas bind? Laziness, inertia, confusion, procrastination. So there is neither activity, neither is there knowledge. Right? So all three, but yet we need all three. To come to this Gita class, what you need? You need sattva. But to get into your car and drive here?
Rajasi.
And then you come here, you should not be? So you need all three. So sattva must always dominate. So all the three have a binding effect. Now the question is, how to go across the three gunas? I know that they bind me, Krishna. Now please tell me how to transcend the three gunas. And that brings us to chapter 15. I'm just briefly going through it. I'm not going through all the verses. Just to give you an idea how it is all connected. Because then if you want to hear all the verses, then you better go back and hear the recordings are there, okay? So we come to chapter 15 now. Now, in order to explain to us about the three gunas, the creation, how he binds us, how to be free from the three gunas, in chapter 15, Krishna uses the allegory of a tree. The Ashwatha tree. And why use the tree? The tree represents, what does the tree represent? The world, the sansara, the whole world of creation. This tree represents the whole world, the whole creation. And why do you use the example of tree to represent the creation? What is the similarity? What is the similarity? Why not use cow, buffalo, something else? Why use tree? The what, sorry?
As big as the world,
as it
is so vast, and the roots are invisible.
Okay.
Therefore, we can see that the Purusha is the invisible part of the world, which is the tree. The big tree represents the world. And we are like the tree. That's why he says it has the also leaves and fruits. The leaves are like for nourishment and protection. The fruits are sweet and bitter. And there are many birds also sitting on it, and the jivas doing it at the same time.
Okay. So if we look at the tree, the very first thing we must understand about the tree is that it is imperishable. When the tree dies, seed. The seed gives birth to another tree. Again the tree dies, comes another seed. So this cycle of creation is represented by the tree to indicate that this cycle of creation never ends. It goes on and on and on. When the whole world is manifested, at the end of the kalpa, the period of time, it goes back into unmanifestation. Nothing is destroyed. Whatever we end this kalpa, the cycle with, whatever desires, thoughts, karmas we have, at the end of the cycle it all goes back into seed form. And at the beginning of creation, the whole thing restarts again with the same desires, with the same thoughts that you had, with the same karmas, you start again the whole cycle. So that's why the relationship between the tree and samsara is because it is cyclical. It never ends at all. Second thing is, he gives us the example of the branches, and as sister said, the branches represent what? The various lokas. So some branches are up, representing swarga lokas, some branches are down, representing the asura lokas, and some are in the middle, which represent the earth where we are in. So the six swarga lokas, 7 asura lokas and bhu loka, the total 14 lokas are represented by the branches. What about the main root, the tap root, which is said in the first verse? Urdhva moolam. Urdhva moolam is root. Urdhva means the root is on top. Where is the root on top? Have you seen a tree with a root on top?
Huh?
No, that is not this tree. That is not this tree. That's a different tree. This one, when he says urdhva moolam, the root is on top. So when we say pray to Bhagwan, where do you normally look? Why do you look up? So when we say the root is on top, it means the root is superior. It is the superior. Why do we call this root superior? Although it is below the ground, the tap root is below the ground, because it is the very source and the nourishment of the tree. Without the tap root, the tree cannot grow. It is the main source of the tree. And yet it is underground. We can't see it. Just like Brahman is the creator of this world, we can't see, but he is a very source of creation. So that urdhva moolam, one root, represents the main root. Just like when you draw your family tree, where would you put your ancestor? At the top of the family tree. To indicate that with this ancestor, the whole family lineage has started. Okay, so that is the main root. Then there are secondary roots below the ground. There are many secondary roots which he talks about in verse number 2. Secondary roots. These secondary roots, what do they represent? What do the secondary roots represent? See, that's why important to go by revision, right? So secondary roots, yeah, you can say in a way attachments. Secondary roots, what is the purpose of the secondary roots to the tree? They hold the tree firmly to the ground. So the tree is the world. What is it that holds us firmly to this world? It is our own vasanas. Our actions that we do create karmas. These karmas again bring us back into this creation. So these secondary roots represent our strong inclinations, our desires, etc. Actions done which create karmas that keep on bringing us back again and again and bind us to this world. So therefore Krishna says, what you should do now, you need to free yourself from this creation. You need to take a strong axe and cut these roots. The only way to detach the roots from the tree is to take a strong axe and cut the roots. So what does this mean to us? The very first sadhana, what we should do? What does that indicate to us, the first sadhana?
Detach,
which is vairagya. Vairagya, detach yourself. But detachment should not mean that you should give up everything. The scriptures are not telling us to throw away everything and run away from the world. What does detachment mean? Sorry? It's a mental state.
You can have it, but you can do that. But we have it, but it doesn't matter. But if we have it, you can have it, but don't get attached to it.
Attachment is another form of dependence. And dependence can lead to addiction. So I am constantly dependent on this person, on this object, on this situation for my happiness, for my peace of mind, for my security, for my happiness. I am constantly dependent on the world. And what type of happiness do you seek? Permanent happiness. And what is the nature of the world? Temporary. So what you are seeking is permanent, but yet you are addicted to the world which is temporary. Relationships change, person, people change, objects change, situations change, and therefore our happiness and security also keep on changing. So first thing is vairagya, meaning I should reduce my dependence on the world. But it does not mean forceful withdrawal, like what sister said. If it is there, okay. If it is not there, also okay. I should reduce my dependence on the world. I should not be dependent. And I should therefore, what is called vairagya, mean to slowly detach. These are all wasteful activities. The more and more objects we have, the more and more possessions we have, they only end up occupying our time and our mind. So I reduce my dependence. So that's the first practice, is vairagya. Now when I am detaching from the world, depending less and less on the world, what is my next sadhana?
Attach
to the higher. Have higher values, have higher goals in life. So detach from temporary, attach to the permanent. Detach from the world, attach your mind to God. How? Through your various sadhanas. Spend more time on karma yoga, spend more time on upasana, spend more time on jnana yoga. Divert your attention. So that second sadhana is mentioned in verse number 4. That goal should be sought. You should have a desire for that goal. So it is not an empty promise, I want to attain that goal, I want to go in that direction. Mumukshutvam, that is the word used in the Upanishads, the desire for moksha. You want to go towards that freedom, the sense of freedom. So that is the second, attach and detach. Then what is the third sadhana?
Saranagati,
surrender. Surrender to that highest supreme consciousness. Seek your support, seek your happiness, seek your security from that highest goal. And then the fourth sadhana is given in verse number 5, which is Sadgunas, which means we must also cultivate the divine values, humility, compassion, kindness, non-violence, all these 26 qualities which are given in chapter 16 verses 1, 2 and 3. 26 divine qualities. We must seek to cultivate as much. What happens when you cultivate these divine qualities? When you start practicing humility, compassion, love, non-violence, what happens? You become more sattvic. You become more pure. You become more sattvic. So, those are the what we call the four sadhanas. So he's told us using the metaphor of the tree how the world binds us and how we should also detach ourselves through these four sadhanas. Okay, so now the question is, I want to detach myself. I want to put into practice the four sadhanas. Where do I start? Where do I start? Give me somewhere to start first. What do I do? Okay, I know all this is wonderful. Where do I start? Give me something practical. So that brings us to chapter 16. In chapter 16, Krishna wants us to understand that the whole of humanity is divided into two categories. And what are the two categories? One category is divine, called Daivi Sampat. Sampat means can say attributes or qualities of the divine people. So one part of population is divine, Daivi Sampat, and then you have another part of the human beings who are Asuri Sampat, who are demoniac. Now how do you say, how do you classify a person as divine or demoniac? So that person who has more sattvic gunas will be considered divine. That person who has more rajasic and tamasic gunas will be considered as demoniac. So that is the two divisions. Okay. So you say one part is divine, one part is demoniac. Sattvic is divine, rajasic and tamasic is demoniac. What is the result of this? So first he explains to us the result in verse 5. Where will divine tendencies lead us to? He says in verse 5, chapter 16, page 281, divine tendencies are deemed for liberation. If you want to go towards moksha, you have to cultivate all these divine attributes, divine tendencies. They will automatically take you towards moksha. And demoniacal tendencies will take you towards bondage. So now we understand that if I want liberation, I want freedom, I have to cultivate divine qualities. Okay, first of all, what are the divine qualities? Because everybody asks, how do I know, many times people ask, how do I know, am I progressing on a spiritual path? I don't know where I am. I need to know where I am and I know I need to know how to progress, right? So how do I assess myself? So chapter 16, very practical. First three verses of chapter 16, Krishna gives you a checklist of 26 qualities. Do you have these qualities? You have to assess yourself. Write down these 26 qualities. Which one you have? Which are your weak points? You know, in marketing, in business, we do what is called a SWOT analysis. SWOT, strengths, weakness, opportunities, threats. So you know what are your competitors' strengths and weakness, you know what's your strength and weakness, what are the opportunities, what are the threats. So in the same way, we have to do an analysis to understand how many of these qualities do I have and how many I need to work on. Some I have, fine, some I'm very weak in this, how do I strengthen these qualities? And God forbid if I have the demoniacal qualities. In verse number 4, which is 6 qualities that Krishna has given. Okay, let's look at the divine qualities. He has given In verse number 1, like fearlessness, purity of heart, worship, sacrifice, study of scriptures, all this we went through in chapter 16. Verse 2, harmlessness, truthfulness, splendor, forgiveness. You have an attitude of forgiveness. If you don't have, that means you lack one divine quality. Then we look at the demoniacal qualities, hypocrisy, arrogance, pride, anger, harshness. If I have these qualities, that means there is some demoniacal nature in me. I have to work on this. I have to reduce these tendencies. So very practical checklist for you. You yourself don't use it to check other people. See, you got all this. I have all the divine tendencies. So check yourself, evaluate yourself, and understand. Therefore, I know where I stand now, and therefore I know which direction I should improve on. Okay. So all the divine and demonical tendencies now. Now the question is, somebody might say, I don't believe in all this, what divine, demonical, all this. I know what to do. I am intelligent, I am a human being, I have got, you know, I am PhD holder, all this thing and all that. I know how to handle my life. Don't tell me divine and demonical tendencies. I will follow what I deem is right. So for those kind of people, Krishna says at the end of chapter 16, verse 23, he says now, what happens if you don't want to follow? If you don't follow the scriptures, what the scriptures are giving us advice, scriptures are telling you, if you follow dharma, this is what you should do, you attain moksha. If you follow adharma, this is what will happen and you will, what will happen to you. And you say, I don't want to waste my time reading, I know what to do with my life. So what do you think will guide your life then? If you don't follow the scriptures, what do you think will guide your life? Huh? Your likes and dislikes, isn't it? What I like, I think is right, I do. What displeases me, I don't do. What gives me pleasure, happiness, I do. So here he says in verse 23, he who disobeys the ordinance of the scriptures, who created this world? Who created you? And he gave you an operating manual. The manufacturer has created and given you an operating manual. How you should operate this body, how you should operate this mind. And if you want to disobey that, the ordinance of the scriptures, and act under the influence of what? Desires. Kama karata. Do what you feel is right, I do, this is wrong, this displeases me, I don't do. I don't care whether it's right or wrong. I care whether it is pleasurable or not pleasurable. What happens to such a person? Three problems. So the scriptures are not telling you don't follow. If you don't want to follow, you should know at least which direction you are going. Okay, what are the three problems? Na siddhim, na sukham, na parangati. What is siddhim? Na siddhim. It says you are not going to attain siddhim. What is this perfection? If I act out of my own desires, I will not attain perfection. What do you mean by perfection? Purity of mind. If I act with my desires, I act with anger, with ego, with pride, with jealousy, with envy, how am I going to attain purity of mind? So, na siddhim, you are not going to attain any internal purification. And if you don't attain internal purification, then na param gatim, how are you going to attain moksha? That ultimate goal, param gatim means the ultimate goal, also you will not attain. If you can't attain purity of body, mind and intellect, how are you going to even attain moksha? Forget about that. Okay, you say, never mind, I still have this world. So what, I have this world, I'm happy. He says, na sukham, you also won't find any happiness. How? Why do you mean I don't find happiness? I have Mercedes car, I got bungalow with swimming pool, I got golf club membership. What do you mean I don't have happiness? It's temporary happiness. Number one, it is temporary happiness. Your mind will always be demanding for. Your mind never demands for less. Everybody's mind demands for more. I'm never happy with what I have. And if your whole life is dedicated to drink, you eat, drink and be merry, what is the biggest problem? If you dedicate your whole life to just your own desires, eat, drink and be merry, and I many people say, I'm not hurting anybody, I'm not telling lies, I'm not cheating, I'm earning money, I give donation, what is wrong? But if your whole life is only centered around that,
forget
moksha.
You
may not get even human birth again. That human birth which you work so many years to just attain, you know how many years we have already been rotating around this equation? Just to attain this human birth, how many lifetimes we have gone through? Finally, we are so fortunate we have attained this human birth. Then when you attain this human birth, the scriptures tell you what is the purpose of this human birth, why you have been gifted this human birth. And then what do? You waste this human birth. You disobey what the scriptures are telling you, your chance to attain moksha, and you waste it behaving no different than an animal. Because the animal also knows how to eat, how to sleep, how to drink, how to procreate, how to do work also. What differentiates a human then from an animal? So he says, na sukham, na param gatim, na siddhi. So therefore, what should I do, Krishna? Refer to verse 24. Let the scripture be your authority in determining what ought to be done, what ought not to be done. Don't follow your whims and fancies. Take the advice from the scriptures. They are telling you, they are guiding you. The scriptures. And how many scriptures has Bhagavan sent? Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas, these guys, still people say, got some more. One already Gita cannot finish, some more people asking for more scriptures. Then gurus also. Bhagavan has got supermarket of gurus. How many gurus he sent? Over the years, sending gurus. Chinmaya mission, Ramakrishna mission, Gita Ashram, Sai Baba, so many missions are there. All whichever you want, go. Then scriptures are there, gurus are there. Third, what is there? Intellect he has also given you. Isn't it? So scriptures has given you, gurus has given you, intellect has given you. What more do you want? So use that. Let the scriptures be your authority to determine what ought to be done, what ought not to be done. Knowing this, you should only act in accordance with the sanction of the scriptures. Okay, very good. But still, what to do, I also don't know. So what do I do? You say follow the scriptures, but what to do in the scriptures? What to do? I want to be sattvic, I want to cultivate all these 26 divine values. I want to be more sattvic, but what to do? How to go about it? So, come to chapter 17. So in chapter 17, again, very practical guys. Very, very practical chapter. Krishna says in verse number 7. Verse number 7. Four practices, four sadhanas. In your daily life, you are already doing all these four sadhanas. You don't have to change the sadhanas that you are doing. What you have to change? Your attitude has got to be changed. What are the four sadhanas? Ahara, food that you eat. Yajna, how you offer your prayers, how you do your rituals and prayers. Tapaha, austerity, how you keep your austerities. Danam, how you do charity. These four all of us are doing. At one point, food of course we eat every day. Yakya, dana, tapa, ahara, we do continuously in our lives. The problem is not doing that. The problem is, are we doing it the right way? So then he takes these four practices and breaks them down into sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. So each of the practices has got three ways to do it. And he explains to us what is sattvic food, rajasic food, tamasic food. what is sattvic danam doesn't mean danam you are doing means that is correct. You could be doing rajasic and tamasic danam. You could be maintaining a fast that is comes under tapas, but you could be doing it for the rajasic or tamasic way. So if you are doing all these practices in the rajasic or tamasic way, are you heading to liberation or bondage? You can say, I'm giving donation, I'm keeping fast, I'm doing prayers, I'm doing rituals. Why am I not progressing towards moksha? Because you are doing all this, but you are doing it the rajasic and tamasic way. So understand, take the advice from the scriptures. Understand what is the wrong and the right way of doing it. Then follow the right way. Eat the sattvic food. Give charity the sattvic way. Practice austerity sattvic way. Do your prayers the sattvic way. So all that he explains in chapter 17. Very practical guide for us. All we need to do is study that. Follow implementing into our lives. And we increase the sattvic gunas. So that ends the up to chapter number 17. And that completes basically the whole teachings of the Gita, and the last was of course Jnana Yoga. So that brings us now to the final chapter of the Gita. Any questions at this stage before we go into chapter 18? Any questions? Now, chapter 18 is entitled what? Yoga of Liberation by Renunciation. The word sannyasa comes in again. Sannyasa, renunciation. See? So now, this word sannyasa actually, Arjuna has repeatedly been asking about it. Sannyasa, sannyasa, sannyasa. Repeatedly he's been asking in chapter 3, if you look at verse 1, chapter 3 verse 1. He's asked this question before also. In chapter 3, verse 1. Chapter 3, verse 1, page 59. So, what did he say here? He questioned Krishna. If you consider knowledge superior to action, why do you urge me to do this dreadful action? Because in chapter 2, Krishna has highlighted that the path of knowledge will lead you to moksha. Then he says, I am willing to leave this battlefield. I am willing to abandon this battlefield and go towards the path of becoming a monk. And if I want to attain knowledge, obviously I can't do it by sitting on the battlefield. But if I become a monk, I can attain knowledge and knowledge will lead me to moksha. Then why, Krishna, do you keep on telling me, don't run away, do your duty. And that duty is what type of duty? Huh? He uses the word karmani gore. Gore means dreadful action. You are pushing me to do something which is going to give me a lot of trouble in my mind. It's going to give me a lot of agitation. But if I take up sannyasa, I don't have to do all this killing. I will have a very pleasant mind. So to us, what does sannyasa mean actually? If we look at Arjuna's question, what does sannyasa mean?
Okay.
So sannyasa is what? I go to ashram, very nice, beautiful bhajans all in the morning, very nice sattvic food all, very beautiful, you know. First day, okay. Second day, okay. Third day, yo, what is this? So, is everybody ready for that sannyasa? Right? We think that is very easy. The Swamijis, you know, they all get people to serve them food and all. They're sitting down there whole day doing nothing, chanting Rama Rama, doing nothing. No, 4 o'clock in the morning you wake up. You do meditation, you do chanting, you read the scriptures. You do seva, those people who come to ashram. No TV, no television. New fashion also you cannot wear. Right? New fashion cannot wear. Right? Anything new comes out, oh, this one cannot wear. Look how you do. So how many of us, so what Krishna wants to stress sannyasa is not a place you stay. Sannyasa doesn't depend on the clothes you wear. Sannyasa is a state of the mind. What is that state of the mind? Chapter 5. Look at chapter 5. He defines sannyasa so beautifully. Chapter 5, verse number 4. Chapter 5, verse number 3. Who is the sannyasi? He defines sannyasa. Who is the true sannyasi? Chapter 5, verse 3, page 100. The karma yogi, he says, the person, the man or woman of action who takes up all his or her duties and responsibilities, who neither hates nor desires, who does not follow raga dvesha, my likes and dislikes. I take up all my duties. Duties means what? That has to be done, that you cannot run away from. Everybody has got their own given duties to do. Depending on our stages of life, we have different duties. So, the karma yogi who neither hates nor desires should be considered a sannyasi. Nitya sannyasi, he says here. Nitya sannyasi. So, sannyasi has been defined to us as a state of mind. If you can't get rid of your likes and dislikes and you go into an ashram, you are going to make an ashram a hell for everybody there also. Right? So yet, Arjuna keeps coming back to this clarification of sannyasi. Again in chapter 5 verse 1, he asks Krishna the same question which he asked in chapter 3 verse 1. He tells Krishna in chapter 5 verse 1, you praise renunciation of action, sannyasa. You say that is great. Then you say, go and do your duty. Say, Krishna, please don't confuse me. I am already confused on this battlefield. Do I do my duty or do I renounce action? Because what is the problem? Again, Arjuna has failed to understand that renunciation of action is not physically giving up the action, but mentally renouncing the action. So I can do the action if I can mentally renounce it. So now again in chapter 18, he takes up the same question again to clarify. In fact, when does thoughts of sannyas come into our mind?
There are two types of vairagya. One is actually vairagya that comes out of desperation. There's the other one which comes out of
knowledge, exactly.
And when it comes out of knowledge, it will be permanent. When it comes out of desperation, it will be temporary.
So, Arjuna's sense or desire for sannyas has come from what?
Desperation.
Desperation. Exactly. And when does our thoughts of sannyasa come out from?
Desperation.
Boss lousy, husband lousy, wife lousy, I don't take sannyasa. So, Arjuna is in the same situation. I want to run away. What excuse do I give? I'll take sannyasa. Very easy. So, if Krishna had encouraged him, okay Arjuna, good idea, take sannyasa, finish. We won't be here studying the Bhagavad Gita. So now he asks this question, what is sannyasa? How do you define sannyasa? Okay. Now what is the question he asks here? First of all, he addresses Krishna. He addresses Krishna with get to that chapter. 16, 17, 18. Okay. Arjuna Uvacha, verse number 1, chapter 18. He addresses Krishna in three different names. First, he addresses Krishna as Mahabaho. Mahabaho. Then he addresses him as Rishikesha. Okay, Mahabaho, you can see in the first line. Rishikesha in the third line. And then he also addresses him as Kesini Sudana in the fourth line. Three different addresses for Krishna all in the same line, in the same verse. So Mahabahu means mighty arm. Mahabahu, mighty arm. Rishikesha means master of the senses. Okay? And Kesini Sudana. Sudana means slayer or killer. Of who? Keshi, the demon Keshi. So that was another name for Krishna, Keshini Sudana, Ari Sudana, all that is a name for Krishna. You are the slayer of the demon Keshi. So why does he address, first of all, to what you call three different names? He uses three different names. And this also explains to us the type of sadhanas also we must do in order to attain sannyas. So first of all, if we want to slay this demon called Keshi, who is this demon called Keshi? All our negative tendencies, lust, ego, anger, etc. So Krishna, when he says slays the demon, we have to understand it allegorically, meaning we also have to be, we have to slay this Keshini Sudana, we have to slay all the internal negative tendencies. And just like if I want to slay a demon, what do I need? Mahabahu, I need to be mighty arm, I need to have great weapons also. So in order to slay this internal impurities with me, in me, to be a Keshini Sudana, I need to be a Mahabahu. What are my weapons? Knowledge, bhakti, karma, etc. All these spiritual sadhanas become my weapons, Mahabahu, to slay my internal, what we call negative tendencies. And if I have all these weapons to slay also, I need another important thing also. What is that?
Huh?
God's grace also. What else? What do I need? I must be a master of my senses. I must practice a disciplined life. I must bring discipline into my life. So when I bring discipline into my life and I practice all these sadhanas, then it strengthens me, Mahabaho, to kill all my internal negative impurities also. So to lead a disciplined life. Now what is Arjuna's question? He says, Ichhami, I want to Veditum, Ichhami Veditum, I desire to know, I want to know what? Tattvam, the truth. Prithak, in detail I want to know the truth. Truth about what? Sannyasa and Tyaga, two things I want to know very clearly. Explain to me in detail, I want to know. Now, Arjuna has reached that stage, can you understand? He's gone through 17 chapters of the Gita. Now he's not asking elementary questions anymore. He's already arrived at a stage where he wants to know now what is the difference between sannyas and tyaga. And if you look at the words sannyas and tyaga, if you translate them, they both mean renunciation. Sannyasa means renunciation, tyaga also means to give up or to renounce. So actually they look quite similar. And it is obvious that since Arjuna has asked these questions, he must have heard this somewhere. Probably he's attended many Gita classes also. And he must have heard sannyasa, tyaga, but now he's saying, Krishna, God himself is in front of me. Who better person can I get this clarification from about sannyasa and tyaga? So this is what he wants to know. So Krishna will answer Arjuna's question about sannyasa and tyaga. But what we have to understand basically is that according to Krishna's definition, which he will give between verses 2 to 12, he will answer Arjuna's question. There is no difference. Both the words mean the same thing. There is no difference. But he will divide this, okay, so later he will drop the word and he will just use one word. Either if you use sannyas or use tyaga, both means the same thing. But what Krishna wants to say is that sannyasa is of three types: sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. Okay? So there is no difference between sannyas and tyaga, they both mean the same thing. But there are three types of sannyasa: sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. Okay? And therefore, When we take up all our duties and responsibilities, and very important, when we talk about duties and responsibilities, we must not forget the Pancha Mahayagnas. Right? So what are the Pancha Mahayagnas? Rishi Yajna, which is what?
Study
of the scriptures. Why does that become our responsibility? The great sages, they sacrificed their lives and their efforts to keep this knowledge alive through thousands and thousands of years. We owe them a great debt, a great gratitude also. So how do you repay back all these great masters who have come down from the line, sacrificed their life and times to keep this knowledge alive? We can repay their debt by studying the scriptures and by implementing the scriptures into our daily life. Second yajna, Manusha Yajna, where we are fortunate enough, whatever we have, we serve the humanity also, Manusha Yajna. So be it through charity, by donation, be it through giving clothes, anadanam, giving food, whatever it is, going and giving your time also, somebody is not keeping well in hospital, you go and see them, that also is a form of dhanam also. So whatever we can do, we repay back for whatever the Lord has given us, we repay back through Manusha Yajna. Three, Deva Yajna, we repay back the Devas again for blessing us with everything. How do we repay back the Devas? We do all the pujas and rituals to thank, not to add to the list of our demands, but to thank the Lords, to thank the Devas for everything that they have graced us. That is our debt. Actually, all this is our repayment of debt. We are, the day we are born a debtor. Till the day we die, we are born a debtor. We owe everything back to something or the other. So, Deva Yajna. Then, Bhuta Yajna. Bhuta Yajna is all the animals, plants, etc. Again, it is our duty. Like we take in oxygen from the plants, we also have to do something. And we destroy so many plants every year. For what? To make our books, our writing paper and all that. So we owe a debt back again. That's why in those days they used to advise to plant trees to pay back to the environment. We are destroying the environment so much. So that is, and also animals, feeding fish, feeding cows, feeding birds, etc. And then finally, what is that? Pitra Yajna. To our ancestors, we owe a gratitude also for everything that they have done for us. So that prayers we have once a year, we do that to, what you call, to thank them for everything that they have given us. So this, doing all our duties and responsibilities, with the right attitude, that is very important. Dedicating our actions to God, doing all our duties for the Lord, it is not done for me, it is not done for my family. I am doing everything for the Lord, because He has created me, He has created the world, He has created everything. So what am I doing? I am serving His creation. Nothing I am doing is for my personal benefit. Whatever I am doing is my service to the Lord. When we have that attitude, whatever we are doing becomes a prayer or an offering to the Lord. It becomes a karma yoga. Otherwise, if you are doing everything for yourself, it becomes karma, full stop. When you have that attitude, everything I am doing for the Creator, the Lord, the Supreme Being, then it becomes karma yoga. And that is called sattvic renunciation. That itself is called sattvic renunciation. So now renunciation does not mean leaving the duties and responsibilities. It means doing your duties and responsibilities with the right attitude becomes sattvic renunciation. So you don't have to be scared of this word sannyasa. Oh, you know, I have to give up everything, give up my bank balance, my car, my everything. No. Do your duties and responsibility, change your attitude, that's all. Sattvic renunciation. And performing the same duties and responsibilities, you can be doing all the Pancha Mahayagnas. You can be doing prayers, rituals, dhanam, everything. but with the selfish attitude converts the same karmas into rajasic and tamasic sannyas. Your renunciation becomes of rajasic and tamasic if your attitude is wrong. Okay, so now before Krishna explains all this, he wants to say what is the current attitude, what is the current knowledge, because there is a lot of confusion, you know, and we have so many scriptures, we have so many gurus, we have 6 different philosophies of religion, as you all know, so all that, right? What do you call that? Vedanta is there, what else is there? Vaisheshika and all that, there are so many 6 schools of darshana, they call it, okay? So everybody has got their own sort of opinions, you know, what is karma, what is jnana, what is moksha. So before Krishna tells his view, his conclusion, he wants to tell what are the other people's views. Now why does he want to do that? Why does he says, before he answers Arjuna's question, he wants to tell the views of other learned people. So why does he want to do that?
To be.
So he's going to tell other people's views first. Before I give my views, I'll tell you what is the general view also. Why do I want to do that?
Clarity.
How we get clarity? There is, correct. You see, what is general human tendency? When you ask a question, and supposing I give a reply, I tell you, no, this is like that. You say, sir, but I heard like that, people saying like that. So before you say like that, better I tell you outside what people are telling you. Then I'll come to my answer. I know you have heard this, you have heard that. Because Arjuna has heard all this and he's already in a state of confusion. So Krishna is telling him, Arjuna, I know this is what you have heard here, you have heard here. Let me tell you what is the general consensus and then I will give you my views. Then it's up to you whether you want to accept that person's views or you want to accept my views. But if I only tell you my views, then you say, sir, but that fellow, that guru told me like that, you know. That fellow told me like that, you know. Then better I clear up all that other confusion first. Okay. So before we get into that also, we have to understand the varieties of karmas that are in our scriptures also. There are varieties of karmas that are described, you know. So the word karma itself, which means action, there are varieties of actions which are defined in our scriptures. One is called sakama karma. S-A-K-A-M-A. Sakama karma. Okay? The word kama means desires. So, sakama means actions which are prompted by desires. Sakama karma. Okay? Actions prompted by desires. Now, these actions prompted by desires are not only the actions we do for our family, for ourselves, but it also includes rituals when we do expecting something back in return. They all fall under sakama karma. So whatever actions I do, whether it is worldly actions or spiritual actions, but my intention is to gain something back, fall under the category of sakama karma. Then there is another type of karma which is called nishkama karma. Okay, kama again, desire is there. N-I-S-H, nishkama karma, which means doing actions devoid of personal desires. So as I mentioned earlier, when you have that attitude that all my actions are for you, Lord, even taking care of the family becomes a nishkama karma also. And all these type of activities fall under 2 categories which we are supposed to do, nishkama karma. What are the 2 categories? One is called nitya karma, N-I-T-Y-A, nitya. Nitya karma means, nitya means every day. They are the duties that you have to perform every day. Without fail, you have duties to perform. You have to look after your family. Basically, they are the Pancha Maha Yajnas generally fall under this. I have to do my prayers, I have to look after my family, I have to do some charity, I have to, you know, do my prayers, etc. So, nitya karmas. Then there is another category of karmas called naimitika karmas. N-A-I-M-I-T-I-K-A. Naimitika karmas. Which is occasional karmas. Those things which I don't have to do every day. For example, prayers to my ancestors. I don't have to do that every day. Only that particular time I have to do. When a child is born in a family, there are certain prayers we have to do. Those are called occasional prayers. So all our duties fall under either occasional, nitya or naimitika. Everyday, nitya or naimitika, occasional. And these are duties we must do, we have to do, we cannot run away from. Okay. Then we have another type of karmas which are mentioned in our scriptures. They are called nishida karmas. N-I-S-H-I-D-H-A. Nishida karmas. What are nishida karmas? Nishida karmas are prohibited wrong actions that we should not do. Like the scriptures tell us, don't lie, don't cheat, don't hurt people, violence is wrong. They tell us what are the karmas also to avoid, nishida karmas also. So that also is outline for us in the scriptures also. And then finally we have one more type of karma which is called prayaschit karma. P-R-A-Y-A-S-C-H-I-T. Prayaschit karma. What are prayaschit karmas? They are a form of remedial action. Supposing you think you have done something wrong or you have done something unintentionally, you have done something and you want to repent. So there are certain karmas, you know, like sometimes you go to the temple, you tell the priest, you say your horoscope like this, every Saturday you will feed the pigeons, or every Monday go to temple, break 10 coconuts or whatever. These are all the remedial actions. Some dosha is there that you feel you have done something wrong or you have done something wrong and you want to pay back. So various type of karmas are also mentioned in our scriptures under the prayaschit karmas also. So now the question is, having understood all this, now Krishna is going to give the opinion of other people first in verse number 2 and 3, and then from verses 4 onwards he will say, now you listen to my decision, what is sannyas, what is death. So we are almost up to time. I will not go into these verses, we will start next week. So any questions at this stage?
Correct.